Are you looking to connect with a diverse audience of developers? Look no further. You can partner with us here at the Code Newbie Podcast, and we'll help get your message out to our incredible listeners in an ad just like this one, led by me, your host. Contact us by emailing sponsors@codenewbie.org. Welcome to the Code Newbie Podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and today we're talking about learning to code. We've all heard the story of quitting your job, spending 3 months learning to code, and immediately getting a six-figure salary. If that's what happened to you, that's awesome. But for the rest of us, it's a bit more complicated.
My name is Colleen Schnettler, and I'm a freelance Ruby on Rails developer.
She's a military spouse, mother of three, and taught herself how to code over a few years. She tells us how she did it and how you can do it too, after this. So I'm so excited to talk to you because you submitted a talk to Codeland, and you are speaking at Codeland, so people get to also meet you in real life after hearing this episode. And your abstract was so fascinating because we have a lot of people in our community who are learning to code and are in very different, you know, situations, different lives. And you actually were a former corporate systems engineer, and then you became a military spouse, stay-at-home mom of three. And while you were doing that, you ended up teaching yourself how to code, and now you're, I guess, back to being an engineer.
Yes.
That's also very exciting. Okay, so let's start with the former corporate systems engineer part. What is that? What is a corporate systems engineer?
Well, I started as an electrical engineer, but largely due to our geographic location because of the military, I started working for a defense contractor where I did more systems integration. So as a systems integrator, I was really the liaison between the people who made the hardware and the people who made the software.
Okay, that sounds hard. That sounds like you need to know a lot of things and put them together.
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah. So how long did you do that for?
I did that for 7 years.
Oh, that's a decent amount of time.
Absolutely. Two different companies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Same general job.
Yeah. And what made you decide to no longer be a corporate systems engineer?
Well, there were a few reasons. One was because of my children, and another was because I didn't really like it.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
Yeah. On paper, it was an amazing job, and I would recommend it to people. You know, great hours, fair pay, but I didn't make anything. I didn't create anything. Mm. And part of the reason I became an engineer was because I wanted to create something.
Mm-hmm.
And in this job, I was really just managing requirements and Excel spreadsheets and that kind of thing.
Okay, so you left. And when you left, were you trying or hoping to get into a different career, or were you deciding to kind of put the career thing on hold for a bit?
Well, I've always dreamed of having the flexibility you hear about people in software careers have.
Yeah.
So it's always been in the back of my mind. And I've always wanted to work for myself.
Yeah.
Just, it sounds so exciting, like the freedom of that.
So when you left, you said, okay, I'm going to go freelance in something else?
Well, when I left, I did have the goal of working for myself, but I never knew how I could make that goal a reality. And I love the stories of people who just set off and start these companies, but that just wasn't going to fit into the life that I had. And so because of that, I casually started to learn to code, I mean, years ago in 2011, because I knew that was an achievable goal down the line.
Yeah. Interesting. So you said that, you know, kind of going off and starting a company wasn't a thing that fit into your life. Why not?
Well, because of the military, I can't pick where we live. We move every 24 to 36 months.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And because of my kids. So I think, you know, when I was 20, I could have done that.
Yeah.
But now in my mid-30s, I just don't have that flexibility anymore, which is fine. Your life changes and your priorities change. I just was trying to find something that fit into my life.
Yeah. So you started learning to code 7 years ago now. What did you first start with? What was the first thing you tried?
Objective C.
Ooh, how was that?
Hard.
I was going to say, that's a big one to start with.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure I read some story about how someone wrote an iOS app and made $1 million.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how often that happens nowadays. I feel like that was really big back then. And now it's, yeah I don't hear the stories quite as often.
I wrote an iOS app and I made $63.
Okay.
You know?
That's more than I made off an iOS app. What did your iOS app do?
It was a baby scrapbook app. So it let you track your baby's first moments and save pictures.
Oh, that's cute. Oh, that's awesome. So how did you make money? Is it like an in-app purchase thing or did you sell the app? Or
I sold it for a while and didn't get much traction there. So then I tried to switch to in-app purchases by buying physical postcards.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I thought it was clever, but no one else did, apparently.
Oh, man. So was that your first app then?
Yes. It absolutely was.
That's actually really impressive. The fact that you learned Objective-C as the first language and made an app that you actually made money from. So I think that's pretty awesome.
Well, thank you.
How long did it take you from starting to learn to actually like deploying a working app?
Oh, a long time.
Yeah.
A long time. Maybe 8 months.
Oh, that's not that bad.
It felt like a long time.
It feels, oh, I'm sure. Oh, my goodness. I feel like when you're stuck on any feature, no matter how small or how big, you know, any amount of time feels like forever. That's actually pretty good. I think 8 months from you know, 0 to 100 is pretty impressive. What was that like on a day-to-day basis? You know, you have to move around. You have the three young kids and you're learning this thing that, you know, it eventually became a real app. What was that life like?
Well, I was still working. I only had one child at the time and I was still working. Mm-hmm. And I actually had more time when I was working than when I was home with my kid.
Really?
So, oh, yeah. Because you have lunch breaks. I could actually get an hour in every day during the workday when I was working and then at home in the evenings at the time. And then when I left that job a couple years later and continued to try and learn to program, it became a little bit harder to find the time, a lot harder actually, to find the time.
Interesting. So how did you find time to learn after you left that job?
I've tried a few things. I try the get up at 5 a.m.
How did that work?
Not well.
Yeah.
Just
me too.
Some people can do that, but I cannot do that. Mm-hmm. I work in the evenings mostly, 8 to 10. I'm a member of a gym, and they have free childcare.
Oh, nice.
I take my baby to the gym childcare, and instead of working out, I work on my laptop.
That is amazing. That is awesome. Wow, that's a really great life hack.
Yes. It took me a while to figure that one out, and then someone else suggested it to me, another mother that I knew, and I was like, yes, that's amazing.
Wow, that's so smart. So what did you do after the iOS app? Did you stick with the iOS thing or did you switch gears?
I didn't. So I love programming. I have found through this process that I love it. I love the problem-solving aspect. I really feel like I'm in my zone when I'm coding. But I also need to make money. And I found that with iOS, I had this thought that I'll make some apps and then I can start freelancing. But at the time, this is before Upwork, it was still Elance, people were offering $200 for an iOS app, and the amount of time and effort, there was no way it was worth my time.
I was wondering that. I was like, that feels really low for the amount of work that takes.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. So I found that it didn't convert well to a freelancing career, which was kind of my goal all along. As I mentioned, I wanted to work for myself. I wanted flexible hours. I had this dream of being able to take the summers off when my kids were out of school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found that that didn't convert. It had been a really kind of painful process. I was tired. So I just took some time off from learning to program at all. And then I started web dev seriously, more seriously, about 2 years ago.
Mm.
And I started with Ruby on Rails, I think because I heard it on a podcast somewhere.
And how did you like it?
I love it. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it quickly. And so that's what I pursued.
So what was the hardest part of starting again and starting a new language, a new framework that second time?
Yeah. Well, you feel a little, I hate to use the word demoralized, but a little down because I had put so much time and effort already into Objective-C. And then Swift came out. So that was really what decided it. Swift came out. And I had the choice to either learn Swift or to pick something else up. Mm-hmm. And I decided to pick up web development because I figured everyone needs a website. Not mm-hmm. everyone needs an iOS app, but everyone needs web. So I started learning Ruby on Rails, and it was hard because the resources are so distracting. And I thought it would be easy for me because I have a technical background. So yeah. I thought I was just going to whip it out. And that was not the case at all. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you get so far in one of these programs, like Google knows you're learning to code. So you see all the ads for all the other programs. So you go halfway through Treehouse or Skillcrush or Coursera, whatever it is, and you're starting to feel a little frustrated. You're starting to get a little lost. And this ad pops up and you're like, oh, if I just do that one, it'll be easy. Mm-hmm. And so I had a hard time staying focused, especially when it starts to get hard.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see that all the time. I see a lot of people bounce around. You know, they'll do the first couple lessons in this one resource and they'll go to the other one. And it's really hard, especially when you see the latest and greatest video tutorial come out and you're like, oh, maybe this is the one for me. You know, it can be hard.
Exactly.
How did you end up dealing with that?
Well, I did them all. I don't know that I did them all. I did several of the popular learning platforms. Mm-hmm. They give you this false sense of security, too, that you think you know what you're doing. So for me, the big jump was getting involved in open source. And for me, that was a game changer to go from one of these hold-your-hand learning platforms to this is how we use it
in real life.
On a big project in real life. And you realize you have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah, and that's always been my frustration, too, when I was learning to code. Even now, when I think of picking up a new skill or, you know, trying to learn something new, the examples are just so perfect.
Yes.
You know, there's no other code base to worry about. There's no, you know, large, scary repo you have to dig through. There's no, like, mean maintainer you have to deal with. Yes. You know, like, it's just this pristine, very simple example that makes you feel like you know what you're doing. And then you apply it to your own code and you're like, nope. That didn't work.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So what was that first, the first open source experience you had? What was that like?
Just by happenstance, I think it was on, someone has a GitHub list of like friendly to open source projects.
Yeah.
And this organization is called Operation Code. And it's actually an organization trying to get veterans and their spouses in technical careers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I started kind of going in, saying hello, picking up some easy issues. And then I tried to pick up something that I had no idea how to do, mm-hmm. and that was get data from Meetup's API.
Oh my God, Meetup's API is a nightmare. Right? Sorry if you work at Meetup and you're listening to this, but seriously, your API is a nightmare.
So I jumped on that because I wanted something challenging. As I mentioned, I had taken all these courses. I felt like I knew what I was doing. Like I was ready to do something. And I got into that and I just was so overwhelmed. I thought there was no way I was going to complete that. And I got lucky in that I DM'd one of the project maintainers and I said, hey, I'm working on this and I have no idea what I'm doing. And he has been a phenomenal mentor to me. And he was like, hey, it's okay. Like, let's do some pair programming. Like, let's figure it out. And that really is the turning point for me, I think, how I went from just learning to getting involved in bigger projects and getting some confidence.
Yeah. Oh, that's so awesome. It's always great when you can find a mentor or, you know, just a person who can answer some questions and give you some guidance and point you in the right direction. That's really great.
Yeah.
So when you were learning Ruby on Rails, we talked about how being, you know, a mom obviously limits your schedule a bit. How did the military spouse part play in? Did that affect your learning, either for better or for worse?
Well, for better, because of this organization, as I mentioned.
That's true.
That anyone can get involved in. You don't have to be affiliated with the military to contribute. Mm-hmm. For worse, it's challenging because my husband has gone a lot. And so the childcare and everything else falls squarely on my shoulders.
Yeah.
And some people can kind of bend their life around learning to code, right? They can get up at 4 a.m. or they can do these things because they know it's going to be for a short period of time and their family can take that sacrifice on in order for them to change careers. But we are not in a position where I can bend my life around wanting to learn to code. I have to kind of bend learning to code around my existing life.
So what did it look like for learning to code to bend around your life? How did your life end up shaping your learn to code journey?
Well, I think a lot of the challenges I faced had to do with just time management. That was a big thing. How and when can I fit this into what's already going on? But I also think I've approached this as a lifestyle change as opposed to something I'm going to knock out in 6 months. Because I've been doing this on and off for 6 years now, like I knew that I have more patience and I know it's going to take a long time.
I love that. I love the shift from this is a thing, you know, this is a thing with a checklist and I'm just going to check all the things off the list to no, it's a change in my lifestyle and my routine. I think it's a much healthier way to approach it. It's funny, earlier today I was working on a feature for the Code and Vue website and I thought I did an awesome job. Everything was working great. And then I hit some really nasty bugs that, you know, I apparently completely missed when I was testing it. And I got so upset and so disappointed. And I had to remind myself, I said, coding isn't a thing that you just check off. You know, it's this is the process. The process is you make something, you put it out there, you think it works, it never does. You come back, you do it again. And, you know, like it's, when you can accept that that is just the story, that's just the journey that it is, and you're not really done.
Yeah.
I think it's healthier for you.
Yeah.
How are your kids taking mom being a coder? Are they like old enough to know what's going on, or do they see that you're making apps and building things?
So I don't know that they really understand that I'm building things. This sounds really cheesy, but I'm trying to teach them, use it as a lesson, like because I work right all the time, anytime I can. Mm-hmm. I think about it all the time. Like if I'm reading about it, I'm reading about code. So I kind of have tried to teach them, hey, this is something mommy wants for her career. And so she's going to work every day during quiet time. Like you can go play with your Legos and mommy's going to work because this is an important goal. And the only way to get there is to commit time to it every day for a long time. So hopefully that rubs off as a life lesson.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see.
Coming up, we talk about how fear and the need to be a perfectionist affected her journey. She also has some great fill in the blanks after this. So what have been the big takeaways, the big lessons for you as you look back on, especially the last few years, as you learn to code and develop these skills? What are some big takeaways for you?
A big takeaway for me is you don't have to be perfect before you start putting things out there. I don't know if you've seen Reshma Saljani's, I think it's a TED Talk on girls, we need to teach our girls to be brave, not perfect.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of it, but I haven't watched it yet. Yeah.
It's pretty good. I'm someone who's always tried to be perfect in everything I do. And I think that has impeded my journey because I think, especially with coding, like you just said about your website, like you just got to do it. And sometimes it's going to be a disaster and sometimes it's going to be beautiful. Mm-hmm. And what has been really hard for me, but the most important thing I have done is I have started attending all these meetups and meeting people in real life, like putting myself out there has been terrifying, but so rewarding. Mm. So I think I've actually grown a lot as a person through this process.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I have a talk that I do called Punch Your Feelings in the Face, which is...
I've got to go look that up.
You do. It's really, it's one of my favorite talks to give. I love that talk. But the idea is that, you know, I think that we put too much value on our feelings. I think that we optimize for them, we protect them, we nurse them more than we should, at least when it comes to career and learning to code. And we avoid doing the big, scary things because we assume that big and scary means that we should run away, which is very logical. It makes perfect sense. And, you know, a lot of times we have to say, yes, it is scary. Yes, it is uncomfortable. But that is an indication of how valuable it's going to be and how wonderful it's going to be if it does work out, you know. And so using that connection for something more productive instead of, you know, using that as a cue to run away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have found that, like, with what I'm doing now, I'm terrified. Like all the time, I'm like, I should call my old boss and get that comfortable cubicle job back. It was easy, right? But it didn't challenge me at all. Mm-hmm. And what I'm doing now is terrifying, but it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What has been the scariest part for you? Has there been a moment or a thing that happened where you were most uncomfortable?
Oh, so many. So many. I think the scariest part was my very first client.
Oh, paid client?
Paid client.
Ooh.
That I was just going to screw up miserably. And I was really worried about that.
Yeah.
Because I was learning as I was doing it.
Yeah. Did they know that you were learning while you were doing?
I don't know.
Yeah. Did they know that you, that they were your first client?
No.
That's awesome. So how did that project end up going?
It went fine. It went
okay,
fine.
Good.
I wouldn't say it was spectacular, but I think it went well. I think they were pleased.
Okay, so they have no idea that was your first one.
Until they hear this.
Yeah. Good for you. That is awesome. How did you end up finding your first client?
On Twitter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
How did that happen? You just tweeted and said, I'm available and I'm amazing?
I should have. I didn't. No, I actually responded to some job I saw on Twitter, and that's how it started. And so since then, it's, and then, you know, from then it's been word of mouth, getting new clients.
Yeah. Well, then you couldn't have done too bad of a job if they said, you know, nice things about you. And
that's what I think.
Yeah, that's awesome. So if you could do one thing differently in your learn to code journey, what would it be?
I would have stayed focused earlier.
Ah, yeah.
Just committed to one language, especially, that's the other thing. Like, you start Rails and then you hear, oh, people don't do Rails anymore. Now everyone's doing Node.js, or, oh, you have to learn React. Or so challenging in the beginning. I would have stayed focused. I would not have switched platforms as free. Yeah. I think I've tried 5 different platforms at least.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have switched platforms. They're all fine. They're all pretty much the same, I think.
Close enough.
So yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And I think also when we think that we are being focused, in reality, we are not. So even if you had said, I'm going to do nothing but Ruby on Rails and you stuck with it, if you had switched resources a million times, you're focused in terms of your language and your framework, but you're not focused in terms of your path and your actual learning process. So I think that's one thing also to keep an eye on. You know, when we say that we're, you know, we're focused and we're dedicated, it's not just the decision of what to learn, how to learn it is also part of that.
Yes.
So what advice do you have for people who might be in a similar situation? Either they are raising a family learning to code, they have a full-time job learning to code, or maybe they're a military spouse and learning to code. What advice do you have for them?
Consistency is the most important thing because, as I mentioned earlier, if you are in a situation where you have, you know, a job, family, other priorities, like, you have to fit this into your life. Mm-hmm. And so I actually found the hashtag 100 days of code very helpful.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I pretended like I had followers. I had like 3 and I pretended that people cared. And
so
that really motivated me. That's really, I think that was like 6 months ago I started doing that. That really motivated me to commit to working a little bit every day.
Mm. Oh, I love that. Yeah, the 100 days of code thing has been really helpful to a lot of folks. I see that hashtag all the time and I see people reach that 100 days and go, oh yes, you know, I did it. I made it. I'm going to do it again. Do my 200 days of code. So yeah, that's a really great one. I want to give you credit also for like starting again as well. You know, I think that when we start something and it doesn't work out for whatever reason, it's hard to go back. You know, like you mentioned, feeling demoralized, you know, when you looked back on, you know, 8 years ago when you first started. And I actually think it's, that part is very brave. And I think it's really awesome of you to say, you know, I tried it. It didn't work. That's okay. I'm going to dust myself off and try it again. I think the again part is really key.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So next, let's move on to some fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
Yes.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is?
That I don't think like a programmer.
Ooh, who told you that? And what does that even mean?
I don't know what it means.
Yeah.
I had a TA my freshman year of college. It was like an intro to C class. And after some assignment I turned in, he told me that.
Wow. I don't understand why teachers say things like that.
I don't either. And if I remember, it wasn't malicious. It was it was probably joking, like, because it was probably, you know, 20 lines longer than it needed to be or something.
Ah.
But, you know, I was 18 years old. What did I know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's not something you say.
No.
Well, I'm glad that didn't discourage you, and you were an engineer anyway.
Yes.
Number two, my first coding project was about?
The baby's first scrapbook app that I mentioned earlier.
I love that idea. I think it's very cute.
Thanks.
Number three, one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is?
Everybody sees your Git commit messages. I did not know that. And so I think when that first open source project, commit messages like, I don't know if this is going to work, or I'm not quite sure what's happening here. Oh my gosh, I was so embarrassed.
That is amazing. I love that so much because I'm pretty sure I've seen, I think there's like Tumblrs dedicated to, you know, the best commit messages. And they're all collections of things like that. And, you know, I don't know if those people also didn't know or just didn't care. But it's, you know, things like, oh my God, this is broken. You know, it's like just the worst, most revealing commit messages. So, yeah. Well, I'm glad you know that now. Hopefully there wasn't anything too embarrassing in there. Okay, so my early coding days, thankfully, I don't think I put any of this stuff on GitHub. I should probably check that. But early on when I did those, you know, those little practice exercises and stuff, and they would say like, choose a variable name. I always called my variables butt. I don't know why. I just thought it was the funniest thing because, you know, I'm 12. I thought it was the funniest thing. And I'm like, you know, this grown adult professional woman. And I swear to God, every coding exercise that you looked at was like, butt equals blah, 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 blah. You know, just butt everywhere. So I'm really happy I never put that on GitHub. Yeah, I understand. Well, thank you so much, Colleen, for being on the show and sharing your Learn to Code story. You want to say goodbye?
Goodbye, and thank you.
And that's the end of the episode, so let me know what you think. Tweet me at CodeNewbies or send me an email, hello@CodeNewbie.org. If you're in DC or Philly, check out our local CodeNewbie meetup groups. We've got community coding sessions and awesome events each month, so if you're looking for real-life human coding interaction, look us up on meetup.com. For more info on the podcast, check out www.codenewbie.org/podcast and join us for our weekly Twitter chat. We've got our Wednesday chats at 9 p.m. Eastern Time and our weekly coding check-in every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks for listening. See you next week.